My girls are 14 and 16, and back in the day when they were born, it was not easy to share photos and videos with loved ones. But now you have a fantastic option available, the Family Album app. The Family Album app was created in 2015 and has operated over the long term to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with loved ones. It's a totally secure personal haven for your family's memories. I love that it's private with no unwanted eyes. Now let me share some of the great features that make Family Album a go-to app. First off, the app automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and see how your child has grown. No more scrolling through endless feeds or searching through folders. Another cool feature of the Family Album app that I love is that you can order 11 free photo prints every month to be delivered to your home starting in August. It's really nice to have some tangible pictures to hold onto or share to document each month of your baby's life. Plus, the Family Album app has unlimited storage and it is totally free. Yes, you heard that right. No more worrying about running out of space when you're just trying to relive those heartwarming moments. So if you're still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, it is time to level up your family photo game with a free photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, it's all one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love one photo at a time. In this short episode, you are going to learn the truth about eating and drinking in labor. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. If you're having a baby in the hospital, you are giving birth in a system that too often takes away power from women over what happens in their own bodies. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a practicing board certified OBGYN who's had the privilege of helping well over 1,000 babies into this world. I've been a doctor for over 20 years, and I'm here to help you take back your power, advocate for yourself, and have the beautiful pregnancy and birth that you deserve. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. Whether this is your first time listening or you have been here before, I am so grateful that you are spending some time with me today. In this short episode, you're going to learn about eating and drinking in labor. First, I'll start with a bit of background information surrounding eating and drinking in labor and why hospitals approach it and doctors too approach it the way that they do. I'll talk about where we are now as our thoughts on it are evolving a bit. And then I'll end with some guidelines and my personal thoughts on eating and drinking during labor. Before we get into the episode, I do want to do a quick listener shout out. This is from DO47295727. And they left me this review in Apple Podcasts. The title of the review says, "If you are pregnant, choose this podcast." And the review says, "This is a fantastic podcast for learning about pregnancy and birth, both a medical and educational perspective, plus great birth stories with Dr. Nicole's takeaways. Highly recommend." Well, thank you for leaving me that kind review. And for everyone who's listening, I would appreciate it if you leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I love to hear what you think about the show. It helps the show to grow, helps other women discover the show who may need it. Okay, let's talk about eating and drinking during labor. So hospitals and physicians have traditionally restricted eating and drinking for all women in labor, even restricting it to the point of just ice chips or nothing at all. And the reason for being so highly restrictive about this, which I don't agree with, by the way, the reason for being so highly restrictive is the concern of aspiration. So aspiration is an uncommon outcome, but it is bad when it happens. So what it is when the stomach contents get into the lungs. So they come up out of the stomach, up through the esophagus and into like the back of the throat area and then down into the trachea and then the lungs. And it can be very dangerous. It can cause your airway to be blocked, making it difficult for you to get oxygen. Also, the acidic stomach contents, because the stomach contents are very acidy in order to help break down food. That can cause a chemical injury to the lungs that can be quite dangerous, and then bacterial pneumonia can develop as well. In rare cases, aspiration can lead to death. Now, the risk of aspiration is really highest with general anesthesia during a cesarean birth. When you're under general anesthesia during a cesarean birth, you don't protect your airway the way that you normally do if you're awake. So if you're awake and you vomit, so picture you're laying flat, and if you're in a C-section and you're awake and you vomit, or even when you're awake normally and you vomit, your natural instinct is going to be to protect your airway, meaning you're going to throw up, like the vomit is going to come out of your mouth and not go into your trachea. Whereas if you're under general anesthesia, you don't have that same protective mechanism because your muscles are all paralyzed so that you don't feel anything during the surgery. So that risk of aspiration is going to be highest with general anesthesia during a cesarean birth. If you have consumed solid foods within the 6 to 8 hours before a C-section with general anesthesia and you have an aspiration event, then the chances of injury are higher. And because most C-sections are unplanned, the thought had been to limit intake for all women just in case, because aspiration can have such severe consequences, okay? But the truth is that low-risk women are not likely to have aspiration, and most women are low-risk during birth. Also, aspiration concern is based on data from quite some time ago, the mid-20th century, like in the 1950s, 60s, when anesthesia techniques were less advanced than they are now. It is actually pretty rare to have a C-section under general anesthesia. It doesn't happen very commonly. Today, we use regional anesthesia, and regional anesthesia is we block a specific area. So that's either going to be with an epidural, which is a catheter that stays in place, or a spinal, which is a one-shot deal of medicine. So it's much more common to use one of those for anesthesia during a C-section. Also, because anesthesia techniques have improved, including like the medicines that we use and those types of things, the risk of aspiration is greatly, greatly reduced. Also, we are starting to realize that labor is work. The uterus is a muscle. Muscles require energy. Energy comes from food. So you're going to need some type of energy during the hard work of labor. So our approach to eating and drinking in labor is evolving, I will say. It's not quite where I think we should be, and I'll talk about that in a sec, but it is evolving. And then what I will add to that is just a bit about the research surrounding eating and drinking in labor. There was a big Cochrane review. Cochrane is an organization that does these really well done reviews where they look at all the evidence and literature surrounding a topic, and then they come up with a summary paper and statement. And the Cochrane review on eating and drinking in labor said studies suggest no evidence of harm or benefit to eating and drinking in labor for low risk pregnancies. Therefore, there's no justification for the restriction of fluids and food in labor for women who are at low risk of complications. There's no justification for it. It doesn't harm or it doesn't benefit, so why are we restricting? Also, the Cochrane review says that there's no data available in the setting of high-risk pregnancies and eating and drinking. It just hasn't been studied, okay? So we don't have any evidence to base our recommendations there. But I will provide some at the end about some high-risk circumstances or higher-risk circumstances, I should say, around eating and drinking and what to do. In my family, we prioritize sitting down and having dinner together every single night. But finding the time to plan meals, do the shopping, and cook from scratch can feel overwhelming. That is where Gobble comes in. Gobble is a meal kit delivery service where each week you can choose from their rotating menu of over 18 gourmet meals. You can mix and match from classic recipes, lean and clean recipes, and vegetarian options, and Gobble will deliver them right to your door. We recently had a gobble meal of Baja style fish tacos with green goddess cabbage slaw and spiced black beans. Hear me when I say it was delicious. And that's because gobble menus are designed by professional chefs. You'll experience a huge range of global flavors and fun gourmet ingredients that make you feel like a pro chef without making a single trip to the store. The meal was super easy to come together because most of their meals only take about 20 minutes. And did I mention how good the chocolate chip cookies were for dessert? See what a difference Gobble will make for your household. Right now, they're offering my listeners a fantastic limited time deal. Get $120 off across four boxes, plus free shipping and free cookies. Go to gobble.com/Dr. Nicole. That's gobble.com/Dr. Nicole today. This offer is not available on their home site, so don't miss out. So as far as where we are now, ACOG is the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. They set practice standards for OBGYNs in the United States. Their position is that oral intake of modest amounts of clear liquids, quote, may be allowed for patients with uncomplicated labor. They are actually on the more conservative side with this. And clear liquids are liquids that you can mostly see through, okay? So that would be water, clear juice without pulp, like apple juice, clear broth, sports drinks like Gatorade, flavored gelatin, you know, Jello, popsicles would be fine. Caffeine-free carbonated beverages like Sprite or ginger ale, that kind of thing. Black coffee is actually considered a clear liquid. Tea as well. And then regarding solid foods, both ACOG and ASA, the American Society of Anesthesiologists, so they weigh in on this topic as well. They recommend against solid food and labor completely. However, other organizations do support it, like the American College of Nurse Midwives. Now, I'm going to be honest. Most hospitals, or I should say many, I think we're evolving, but many hospitals, doctors, labor and delivery nurses just are not comfortable with women eating solid foods in labor because of that aspiration risk. It's not something that we're necessarily staying up to date on universally in terms of practice patterns. However, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, and it's based on data and evidence, if your pregnancy is low risk, you should be able to eat food and drink whatever you want during your labor. Now, ideally, you want to choose foods that are low in fiber so that they move through your stomach quicker, so that in the event if there is that rare instance of needing general anesthesia, you don't have a lot of food in your stomach. And low fiber foods that move through faster would be things like refined breads, pastas, crackers, cereals, like things made with white flour, essentially. Applesauce, eggs, smooth peanut butter, pudding, yogurt, smoothies, honey. Those are all things that are low fiber that are going to move through your system quickly. I've seen people use those little honey sticks or have like little tiny things of granola or, you know, peanut butter, things like that. Now, there are some instances where eating solid food in particular is not a good idea because of the higher risk of aspiration or the higher chance of having a C-section. You should still be able to drink liquids and clear liquids because that should be available to everyone. But there are some scenarios when you should stick to liquids in labor and not eat solid foods. This list is not exhaustive, but here are a few conditions. One, you have severe reflux that isn't helped with medication. So if you have really, really, really terrible reflux, that's going to increase the chances of aspiration. And that's reflux, again, that isn't helped with medication. If you've had a C-section before and you are doing a TOLAC or trial of labor after cesarean, then you're going to be at a higher risk of having a C-section. So you want to stick more to clear liquids. If you have a neurologic condition that makes your stomach empty slower, like multiple sclerosis or even longstanding diabetes, then that's an instance where you may want to just stick to clear liquids. Also, if your BMI, body mass index, is above 40, based on your height and weight, for example, if you were 5'3" and weighed 225 pounds, that would put you in a BMI of 40, just to give you an example. Then there is evidence that you have a higher risk of aspiration based on your weight. And in those instances, you may want to just stick to clear liquids. Now, here's the thing. Most people in the active part of labor are not super hungry. Most people will lose their appetite, and you actually won't want to ask for something to eat when you get in the active part. And active is going to be like 5 or 6 centimeters or later. Now, in the early part of labor, up until then, which can last some time, which can last hours, days even, then you can and should eat in the early part of labor, especially when you're still at home, so you have some energy. Again, as I said earlier, labor is a process that requires energy. So in the early part, you definitely want to eat something so you have energy. And when you're at home, you're more able to eat what you'd like. So eat something. Now, you know, this ain't the time for like a Big Mac combo meal, but eat some things so you have some energy. And when you get into the active part of labor, honestly, you really just won't want to eat so much. All of your energy is just focused on the labor. Now, this is often reframed. The issue of eating and drinking in labor is reframed in a patient-centered way as a bodily autonomy and human rights issue, meaning that we shouldn't just make these blanket statements about you can or cannot eat during labor. Most often it's cannot eat during labor, that really it should be an individualized approach about what your individual risks are, the clinical situation, your preferences, and remembering that you have the right to decide what happens in your own body. Now, because of that, there are many doctors who are starting to encourage women to eat or drink something, particularly in the early part of labor. And this is as it should be. It really should be a shared decision-making process. Like, for example, if I know that, hey, the baby's heart rate is not looking great, or I have some concerns, then yeah, I'm going to say don't eat or drink a whole lot, because if we have to go back for a C-section, we want to be prepared. But if the baby looks good and there are no issues, then sure, you should be able to eat and drink as you see fit. Now, the problem with that is that we live in a very legal climate where doctors, understandably so, have some fear around, oh, you know, I said you could eat and that was against, quote, traditional recommendations, and then you ate and then you had this aspiration event, could you come back and get sued? So people have that understandable fear or concern in the back of their mind. But we need to just reframe it as you have the right to decide what happens in your own body and understand where things are based on your own unique circumstances and make a decision from there. So some questions that you want to ask your doctor about eating and drinking in labor is, what is their personal policy on eating and drinking in labor? And this isn't like a confrontational kind of thing. This is just so you understand what you're going into. What's the hospital's policy about eating and drinking in labor? And the answer to those questions may be different, so ask for both. And that way you can kind of be prepared. I have seen some people, and I'm not advocating for this necessarily, but I've certainly seen people sneak food in or sneak snacks in or things like that. So just know what you're getting into. It may be that you decide to eat a little something on the way to the hospital before you get there, if you know that where you're going is particularly restrictive about eating and drinking during labor. Okay, so that is it for this episode. Please share it with a friend. Also, remember to leave me a review in Apple Podcasts. I'd love to hear what you think about the show. And of course, while you're there, subscribe. In fact, subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to me right now so you never, ever miss an episode. That is it for this episode. Do come on back next week. And remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.